Well, alrighty, gang. Welcome back to the Gutowski Files, starring Stephen Gutowski. He is the owner, editor in chief, founder, lead reporter, IT guy, HR department over at the Reload.com. We were just lamenting small business life. I am new to the private sector and to working at a small business, but running one is a different story. Stephen, how are you, sir? Other than exhausted,
you should have kept that government job, man.
I could have stayed around. I retired at 50 years old in 1 month. I could have stuck around until I was 57. But law enforcement's a young man's game, you know, and I wasn't interested in the kind of office job stuff. I wanted to be out there running and gunning and chasing bad guys. And so,
glad that you came here and are doing this now. So I appreciate the hard work you put into it.
I appreciate that, sir. And you are wearing a Veteran Stadium throwback t-shirt, yeah, which I do love. Yeah. Back in the day, back when the Eagles fans threw like bricks and Molotov cocktails at the opposing team.
The jail. Yeah. Everybody likes to talk about the jail. I was at the last Army Navy game at the vet. So fond memories.
Very good. So last night, or so I hear from my Facebook feed, unfortunately, the State of the Union address happened and the president said a bunch of things, and I didn't watch it. And I intentionally have backed way away from politics only because I have found that I have very little influence over what anyone thinks about anything. So I rely on you, Stephen. Breathe for me, Stephen Gutowski. Tell me what happened at the State of the Union, because I don't know. And I figure you will give me a sane, sober breakdown of what happened. That is your wheelhouse, after all.
Well, obviously, I don't think we'll get into too much beyond the gun policy side of things. That's right. Not our wheelhouse. But other than just to say that he was certainly very energetic, and this is one of those things that you've seen a lot with Biden's opponents, which is where they set the bar of expectations way down at the bottom of the ground. And so if he doesn't pass out and die in the middle of the speech,
right,
he's considered to have exceeded expectations in some regards.
He fell asleep once.
He was certainly very energetic and loud and yelly at times. And he went back and forth with Republicans in the room who yelled at him. And, you know, the state of our politics is the state of our politics. I think everybody listening is probably well aware of where we're at today. But, you know, specifically on gun policy, because that's what we focus on. Mm-hmm. Perhaps the most interesting thing is that there wasn't a change in how he's approaching it.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
In the sense that, like, every State of the Union he's done, he has called first and foremost for a new assault weapons ban, for, you know, a ban on so-called assault weapons, things like generally this is obviously it's a term that means different things depending on what state you're in or what proposal you're looking at. But generally it applies to obviously firearms like AR-15s or AK-47s, semi-automatic guns that accept detachable magazines and have a certain list of features to them. It's a feature-based ban, pistol grips and adjustable stocks, telescoping stocks or barrel shrouds, right? Things like that. But that was the top of his priority list. He said Congress should pass an assault weapons ban, high capacity magazine ban. And again, high capacity magazine is a term of art, so to speak. It means different things in different states. It's kind of wild how much that varies, actually, from like some states. It's different capacities for different kinds of guns. Some states have a lower limit for handguns than they do rifles. That was the focus of every State of the Union to this point, and it was the focus of his speech last night when it comes to gun policy. So the why that's interesting to me, at least, is it shows he is not tacking to the center on this issue, even now as we are in the general election, essentially. I mean, we had Super Tuesday, they call it, right? The primary day where you have a bunch of states hold their primaries, and Joe Biden and Donald Trump essentially won all of them. I mean, Nikki Haley won Vermont, which is the only like sizable state. I think the American Samoa went against Biden for somebody no one has ever heard of. But all intents and purposes, the primaries are over. Nikki Haley dropped out. I think one of the Biden opponents dropped out, that Dean Phillips, I think was his name. You get the idea. The general election is on now.
And die is cast, as it were.
Yeah. And it's interesting because traditionally, It had been the case that politicians will run towards their base during a primary because they will win the primary. And then when the primary is over, they try to moderate a bit, move back to the center on different issues. And you have not seen that from the president, certainly not last night in his State of the Union speech. I think, you know, obviously we're focused on guns and he didn't move at all to the center on that issue during his speech in terms of listing out what he wants Congress to do and where his priorities are. But you could probably say the same thing for most of the other issues that he mentioned during the speech as well. You know, the different policies may have different levels of bipartisan support, but he didn't really change anything in his approach too much. And, you know, perhaps trying to rally more of his own supporters to him, since that's been an area of weakness in his polling over the last, I mean, year or more.
Right.
So,
what is the moderate middle, the middle? What, I mean, how do we have any ideas or any polling as far as political on the political spectrum? Like, how big is that number? Is it, do we know, has it been quantified? Because we may be at a point now where there's no point in tacking back to the middle during the general, because everyone kind of has picked a side for the most part. So I don't know how important in your estimation is the moderate, is the middle of the pack anymore politically?
I think that's a really good point, especially on gun policy, because the country has become so polarized and some of these issues have become entirely captured by one part of the, or, you know, the different sides of them have become entirely captured by one part of the, or the other. And on gun policy, there really isn't much out there in terms of like Democrats that are pro-gun anymore. That used to be a much more common thing going back 10, 15 years, right? You still have it a little bit, maybe John, some of these Democratic senators who, especially those facing tough re-elections right now, like John Tester in Montana, oppose assault weapons bans still. But yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons you might not see this sort of move back towards the middle is, first of all, while the majority of Americans didn't want to see this rematch, it sure appears that the partisans in each party, the particularly dedicated primary voters for both Democrats and Republicans, did want to see this rematch, or evidently, at the very least, they really don't think that their candidate can lose. You know, for all the reasons you could list out the issues with each one of these candidates, we've talked about some of them in the past on either side, and you know, so each side is convinced that their guy can't lose because the other guy is so bad. And I mean, I think that's obviously, look at the polling and it sure seems like either one of them could lose. But regardless, yeah, that there does seem to be a feeling that maybe just turning out partisans, people who are already committed to your side, is what's going to matter more than trying to convince moderates. And I do question that logic though. Right. Because it could be the case. It's hard to know exactly what's going to happen. Obviously we can't predict the future here, but in an election where it's going to come down probably to a couple thousand votes, 10,000, 15,000 votes in a couple of key states, you know, Arizona being where you live, one of them, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Nevada, Georgia, some of these states are going to, like they were the last two elections, probably decide this one. And it probably won't be by a huge margin. It'll probably be by a percentage point or less in some of these races. And when you're talking about those kind of margins, yeah, even though there may not be as many swing voters as there used to be, not as many moderates as there used to be, the ones that exist are going to matter a lot.
Yeah, no, right. Concur 100%. I wonder, you know, some polling people, some pollsters, maybe you should ask someone, a nationwide firm, to run a poll on how many people who were very engaged prior to, let's say, 2016 and then 2020, like me, very engaged. I mean, I lived and breathed politics all the time. How many people have pulled a Mike Williver and been like, you know what? I'm out. I already know who I'm going to vote for. I don't need to follow this as closely anymore, and just aren't paying as much attention as they used to because of frustration. And I think probably a lot of burnout on a lot of people's part. They just can't be bothered. It's too much of a distraction. It's making them angry. It's they're losing friends and all the stuff that went on for the last 8 years. I wonder how many people are in my position. Probably more than you think.
I think it's probably a lot just anecdotally. And I think there is some polling on this. I don't recall it off the top of my head that would see that is in line with what you're talking about. For me, at least what comes to mind on that point is more like political media attention, you know, and maybe that's because I'm in political media, right? But if you look at like cable news ratings, for instance, they are nothing compared to what they were in 2016 or 2020. Or you look at like subscriptions to newspapers are nothing like they were in 2016 and 2020. People really include
online versions of the newspapers?
Yeah, yeah, including just every avenue. And you know, I think a lot of people maybe expected Trump back on the ballot was a big boon for the news industry in those years. And people paid attention a lot more to what was going on. It was a lot of chaos and a lot of intrigue and a lot of, frankly, sort of politics as entertainment going on during that period. And having him back, I think some people expected that was going to be the case again, but it looks more like, yeah, people are pretty tired of all this. And I mean, if you watched the State of the Union last night, there was certainly a lot of politics as theater or entertainment stuff going on, people wearing wacky costumes and canes and yelling out at each other and back. Like it was, you know, kind of a clown show to some degree.
Really acting like adults there in the Congress, are they?
You know, not that they're ever, it's Congress, right? Not that they were ever necessarily our role models for society, but.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, every generation, everyone's heard this, right? Every generation of parents thinks that their kids are, you know, the country's ruined, it's over, because the kids these days with their rock and roll and their marijuana and their party hats, you know, that's kind of a generational thing. Every generation. It's probably the same about politics. I'm sure, you know, Tammany Hall and all this other stuff. This stuff's been going on for a long time where there's been fraudulent activity and there's been shenanigans and there's been all this sort of bad behavior, even on the floor of the Congress. This is not actually a new thing. I just don't like it personally. I wish
people got beat up on the floor of Congress before. We had a whole real civil war.
Right.
Well, you know, so while things are not great, I think in our country, most people would agree. I think history shows us that it's not always necessarily as bad as we like to imagine it is, or we get hyped up into thinking it is. But yeah, I do think that what you're getting at with this sort of fatigue, politics fatigue, is a real thing that's happened, and it'll probably maybe be a little bit longer until people start to reengage with this stuff. I mean, we are pretty far away from it's locked in who's going to be in this election. Everybody's pretty familiar with both of these candidates at this point. And so they might not start paying really close attention until several months from now, right?
I'm telling you, anecdotally speaking, I've already got people on my social media feeds. I put an announcement out today. I was like, hey, look, if you're going to post angry political stuff all the time, you're not going to see me till next February. I'm going to snooze you until next February because I'm not interested. And because at this point, as far as I'm concerned, the like Facebook and whatever other social media you use, political posts, you're not convincing anyone of anything. This is a thing that dawned on me a couple of years ago. You're just thumping your chest. And I'm off on a tangent here, I understand. But I think there's probably more people like me than you think, and probably on both sides. And the moderates, I don't know who hasn't made up their mind. Maybe they're just wishing and praying for something more, literally more moderate to come along. But I just don't see that happening in the next couple of election cycles. I think we're going to remain this way, unfortunately, for some time.
Yeah, I think our politics are certainly more driven by the hyper engaged partisans at this point than people in the middle. And look, you know, not that there is a set moderate position on gun policy, right? And to be fair to Biden, we're talking about Biden because he's the president and he gave the State of the Union last night, right? We're filming on Friday, and you know, so it, seeing his approach in that speech gives you a preview, I think, of his campaign, at least the early parts of his campaign strategy. And the reality is that he shows zero sign of departing from what he's been focused on the last 3 years as president, which is a pretty aggressive push for new gun restrictions, one that is more aggressive than his predecessor. You know, when he was vice president and Barack Obama was president, the marquee policy that they pursued at the time was universal background checks, right? a universal background check bill. That was the big push for gun policy during the Obama administration. And it's a much more popular policy in polling, at the very least, than assault weapons bans are. Like, you look at the polling and, you know, universal background checks, which still didn't garner the support needed to pass in Congress. And, you know, when they've been tested at the ballot box in places like Maine in 2016, where there was a ballot initiative on universal background checks, they don't perform quite as well as the polling suggests they would. People like the concept of background checks for fairly obvious reasons, I think. But when you get into more of the details with a lot of policy stuff, I think you start to see more opposition grow to some of these things based on the details of them. But regardless, it's still a fairly popular concept. And assault weapon bans just aren't that. They're much less popular, have never been as popular as universal background checks in public polling. At their height, they probably were in the, you know, 66% approval range. And they've actually become less popular as Biden has been president, where we now see a majority of voters in polling opposed to assault weapons bans in some of the most recent polls on this question. So he's still pushing this policy that is more aggressive, that is an actual ban on the kinds of guns you can own that are very popular firearms. And the AR-15 is the most popular rifle in the country, right? And he's doing that at a point where it's not a very popular policy anymore. It's even less popular than it used to be. So that speaks to this point on moderation. It's not that he should try and, I'm not saying there's some perfect middle ground on gun policy. Obviously, a lot of people are not going to agree on that point or what the right mix of policies is to be centrist or moderate. But obviously, pursuing assault weapons ban as your top priority over something like universal background checks or whatever else is a more aggressive and less moderate position to hold
as a
politician.
Yeah. And I got to say, back to what I was talking about a moment ago, I think the only way that everyone could agree on all the gun laws in the whole wide world is if we could all be 100% assured that the government will always be benevolent and just and reasonable. You know, then I'd be all for background checks. I'd be all for, you know, people making sure everyone has to have a CCW to make sure they're properly trained. But the problem is all those things are potentially down the road. They are ins, but not potentially down the road. They've already been ins for the government to pick and choose who has the ability to defend themselves with a firearm. Right. I mean, look at California for decades. Many of the California counties where I live, San Diego and Orange and LA County, you couldn't get a CCW permit if you were a regular, you know, private citizen, unless you knew someone or gave a lot of money to the sheriff's reelection campaign or whatever. So, you know, I think a lot about the idea of gun control and the idea of the government controlling who gets guns and what guns they get. And all roads lead to bad stuff, in my opinion, as long as the government is made up of people, of human beings, you know, who are fallible. Not to get too far afield, I'm gonna cut today kind of short because I got to meet with John and do some badge cams for the main channel, and I want to make sure this gets out to the kind people in our audience. Steve, did you have anything to add? I won't leave anything out.
No, you know, it's just obviously, in addition to Biden, you can look at Donald Trump and see that he's not tracking tacking right to the middle. I always get those two things, track or tack, mixed up. But I think you said it's a sailing metaphor, right?
Yeah, to tack is something to do with a sailing boat turning one way or the other. I can't remember if it's the rudder or that big swingy, boomy sail. Some sailors out there cringing right now.
Well, so, you know, this argument that we've just gone over with Joe Biden, you could obviously equally apply to Donald Trump at this point, I think, because if you go and listen to his speech to the NRA last month, there was no sort of sign of moderation on gun policy there either. So nobody seems to be trying to tack to the middle on maybe anything.
Maybe they're right. Because I mean, how many people do you know who have no idea where they stand on gun control or are on background checks? Or I mean, most people who are paying any attention, most people who are going to vote are probably have their mind made up. I mean, I could be wrong, but again, that's something for the pollsters to figure out. All right. I'm going to wrap it up. Stephen, sir, as always, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate your time. Sorry this is so late in the week. We want to talk about the State of the Union. Stephen's a busy guy. Folks, do me a favor. Go over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to this. Give us a 5-star review. Say something nice or say something mean. I don't care. Just say something. Just engage. And Stephen, as always, sir, you have the last word.
Absolutely.